This week on Come Receive the Light, we tackle one of those social issues that's touching all of us, especially those in the church.
Now, on this issue, we have to stand firm with love and say we believe that gender was created in this way for our salvation. And we respect that our larger society doesn't believe that anymore, but they're conducting a very bold experiment, and we know how it's going to turn out.
What we don't know is how long the journey will be and how circuitous the path, but there are foundational understandings in the Bible that guide us, and we'll talk more about that in our feature conversation coming up at the end of the broadcast. Speaking of journeys, we have a testimony from a man who was on a journey and found out that the direction he was taking seemed all wrong.
Oh, it started, I think, sailing down the East River one day. I was coming in from Sag Harbor back into Manhattan, and I just remember very clearly I was coming under the 59th Street Bridge, and, you know, it was Monday morning, and Manhattan was coming alive, and I was just so full of myself, you know. I was thinking, boy, I have it made, and how many people are just looking at me right now thinking, I wish I were doing what he's doing. And I was sort of reveling in that, and it was like in the same moment, Father, it was like the Holy Spirit said to me, but these people are actually doing something with their lives.
Wow. Have you ever had a moment like that when the Lord just seems to grab your attention and change the direction you're taking in your life? We have some takeaway for you in our first conversation today. This is Come Receive the Light, a broadcast outreach from the Orthodox Christian Network, a ministry founded by Father Christopher Metropoulos. He is also our host, and he's the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology. And I'm Mike Trout. We're on the web at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Maybe you're there right now. We're a nonprofit outreach and would appreciate your prayer support and your financial support. On the homepage, there is a link to our donate page, and there are many ways in which you can join with us financially. Again, that's myocn.net. Well, our first guest today is Steve Butler. Stephen Butler is an award-winning composer who teaches music theory, composition, orchestration, and form and analysis at Westmont College in Santa Barbara, California. What a beautiful setting. I've been there many times. He joined Father Chris to talk a little bit about his music and a lot about his spiritual journey.
I know that you come from a long line of Southern Baptists. That's what I was told. Tell us about your journey to Orthodoxy, Stephen.
Well, that is true. As far as I know, my father's father and my mother's father and their fathers were all Southern Baptist deacons, Sunday school teachers. And this is how I was introduced to Christianity as a child. And I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church. It was, I'm very grateful for my experience. But once I reached adolescence, you know, past adolescence into becoming a teenager, oh, there were distractions and there were temptations, and the world just didn't look along the same lines of the Southern Baptist teachings the way I saw it. So I basically left the church altogether, and I became a professional yacht captain and started sailing. It was really mostly these magnificent sailing yachts, you know, 100-footers in the West Indies and the Mediterranean and New England. And so I had that kind of worldly experience. And it started, I think, sailing down the East River one day. I was coming in from Sag Harbor back into Manhattan, and I was standing behind the wheel of this, you know, luxurious 100-foot sailboat. It was built in 1914 for Lord Sackville. I mean, it was really a magnificent boat. And I just remember very clearly I was coming under the 59th Street Bridge, and, you know, it was Monday morning, and Manhattan was coming alive. And I was just so full of myself, you know. I was thinking, boy, I have it made. And how many people are just looking at me right now thinking, I wish I were doing what he's doing. And I was sort of reveling in that, and it was like in the same moment, Father, it was like the Holy Spirit said to me, but these people are actually doing something with their lives.
Wow.
You know, it was really like that, and it's like, you know, they're making decisions that affect the way people live, they're doing things to help people, and you're just in this fantasy world watching it all go by.
In that experience, then, let me ask you the next question, then. What was it about Eastern Orthodoxy that most appealed to you, that brought you there?
Well, it was the reality of it. It was the realness of it. Once I decided, you know, at that point things changed, and once I realized that I didn't want to wake up in Tahiti, you know, 60 years old, having done nothing but sailed around all my life, I started to move away from that, and that's when I moved back into the academy and started doing graduate work. And it was during my work on the master's degree that I was introduced to Orthodoxy. I was back in South Carolina at the University of South Carolina, and I had some friends who had been married for several years, and they had their first child. And so these people were acquaintances of mine, and I was very close to them, but they were Eastern Orthodox, and so I had heard a little bit about the faith, but wasn't really, I mean, I wasn't going to church at the time. I never became like an atheist or really even agnostic. I just stopped practicing, you know, so to speak. And but they invited me to the baptism, and this was at Holy Apostles Orthodox Church in Columbia, South Carolina. And at that point in time, it had moved from a dentist storefront to a converted pizza parlor.
Oh, my.
And so here was this little ramshackle of a building with, you know, 10 or 12-foot ceilings. This is not some grand cathedral.
No, not anymore.
And so I walked into this room, and the only thing I can say, Father, is that when in those moments, as the child was being baptized in the name of the Father and of the Son, it was like the seams of the walls were going to burst with the Holy Spirit. I mean, that's the way it felt to me. I felt like I was about to burst, just pinned against the wall. I had never really in my life remember experiencing, you know, any sort of just grip, you know, of the Holy Spirit in the way that I felt it during that baptism. So, I mean, I was having, it was difficulty to retain my composure. You know, it was hitting me that hard. It was so powerful. And so that was my introduction. And I tried to steer away from it because, I knew my friends well enough to know that they were, you know, they were in church like three or four times a week, and during Holy Week I never saw them. And I thought, well, maybe there's more to Christianity than I'm giving it credit for, but I don't think I want to be Orthodox. You know, it seems like too big of a commitment. And so I sort of started going back to church, and I went back to the Baptist church for a while, and I went to an Episcopal church and several churches, and was kind of church shopping, trying to find something that wouldn't take quite the commitment that Orthodoxy seemed, you know, to expect.
Definitely.
You know, I was in university at the time, so, you know, I would go to sources and I would see what their sources were, and it was interesting because I would get back to the Roman Catholic Church and most of the English sources, and then find the Greek sources in the Orthodox Church. And so it all kept pointing back to Orthodoxy, and I think that there were two great turning points for me in my catechumenate, and one was, I don't remember, this was Father Peter Smith, and Father Peter and I were, I was, you know, I don't know if it was the Virgin Mary or the Virgin Birth or what, I was debating something with him, and he stopped and he said, well, you know, Stephen, you don't have to do this. We're not going to change the church for you. And it just caused me such pause, because my experience in most other churches had been, well, we'll do anything to get you to join.
Right.
And
so there are some things that are not compromised.
Right.
There's some things that are not just discussed.
There's no compromise here.
Okay.
And for me, that was appealing. See, that was appealing to me, and that was a big turning point, and I realized that there was something very, very important happening here. And then the second was I happened to be at the Monastery of the Glorious Ascension in Resaca, Georgia, when the She Who Is Quick to Hear icon began to weep for the first time since it had been in that monastery. And the bishop was there, Bishop Dimitri, as it started to weep. And it was just an incredible day, you know, to say the least.
Well, I know that you teach classical music at Westmont. And if you would, we're going to change the conversation just a bit into a different level. And tell us what you see from the professional standpoint of classical music and dealing with the hymns of the church. Because I know someone who loves music myself, I'm not a classics person. I don't know much about the classics. But I do love music and love the hymns of the church. So I'm wondering from your perspective, how you put the two together, or are they opposed to each other? I don't know.
Well, it's a big question. I don't see any disagreement between classical music and Orthodox music. I mean, in many ways, there are attributes of certain types of art music or classical music that would be very much like certain types of Orthodox music. Certainly, our four-part hymns that come out of the Russian style. I mean, these are very much in the same trend of Western music that came out of 18th, 19th century Europe, and so there's no huge distinction there, I think, between what we would consider art music and what we would consider music of the church. It's really more cultural differences, I think, because certainly in the I'm at the Antiochian Church here in Santa Barbara, and the Byzantine tones that we use here are quite different from the Kievan or Obukhad tones that we use in the OCA in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So there's a different sound, I think, to some of the tones, and then there are some church hymns which lend themselves, or we should say church jurisdictions, which choose to use hymnology that is more homophonic and more choral in nature, and then certainly in the Greek and Antiochian practice, it is much more chant-oriented and more monophonic, or in the Byzantine tone styles. Mm-hmm. I think we're just looking at different types of music within the same sphere.
Okay, very good. What about advice that you might give Orthodox Christian musicians who aren't writing church music but want to express their faith through their art?
Well, that's the one that I think we all struggle with, whether we're musicians or plumbers or doctors or talk show hosts, or it's how do we do it? How do we express ourselves in a way that is glorifying God? And I think that it always reminds me of the parable of the talents. And at the end of the day, I just think, am I being a good steward with what it is that I have? Mm-hmm. And if I'm writing music, if I'm playing music, if I'm transcribing music, if I am, whatever the position involved in working with music concerns, when I'm doing this, am I doing it for the glorification of me, or am I doing it for the glorification of God? And I think that's a question that we just constantly ask ourselves. And I think that the solution to the dilemma of, because I have students, these students are always asking me, I just want to do God's will. What is God's will for me? And I say, God's will is very clear. You feed the hungry, you clothe the naked. I mean, he's told us what his will
There's
is.
There's no secret there.
Right, there's no secret there. Right. But in terms of how you work that out in your life is according to what God has given you. And so that is the is when it starts to get tough, is I think when one takes an honest appraisal of oneself and says, well, what has God given me, and what is it that I can do with it to glorify Him?
That is so well put. Don't look at what someone else has. Look at what the Lord has given you and ask yourself, are you using that to the best of your ability to honor and glorify Him? Steve Butler has been our first guest on today's edition of Come Receive the Light. Steve is on the staff at Westmont College out in Santa Barbara. If you're ever in the Santa Barbara area, just peel off the interstate there and visit Westmont. It's a beautiful campus, and see if Steve's around and talk with him about the fact that you heard him here on Come Receive the Light with Father Christopher Metropoulos. Again, I'm Mike Trout. We're on the web at myocn.net, and there is a lot more there than just this particular broadcast. I encourage you to check us out again, myocn.net.
I feel just a tremendous empathy for everyone who's struggling in our society. I don't think it's some narrow subset of people on some dimension of the sexual struggle, whether it's promiscuity or things online that we shouldn't be watching, or same-sex attraction or transgender disorientation. I think many, many people are struggling, and it's one of the problems of our age, and we should be patient and compassionate.
Well, our feature conversation today is hosted by Father Gregory, the rector of St. Vladimir's Orthodox Church, just outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan. He is also the dean of the Diocesan Seminary. He's the secretary of the Diocese of Chicago and Mid-America. And Father Gregory is the dean of the Michigan parishes of the Diocese of Chicago and Mid-America. A very busy man, and we are especially thankful for his involvement with us here at Come Receive the Light, especially as he tackles with his guest a very difficult topic.
In our modern society, fluid expression of gender is common, and many faithful have ignored or are ignorant to the Orthodox understanding of how God meant for gender to be experienced. We have with us today Dr. Timothy Petitsis. He is the Assistant Professor of Christian Ethics at Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology. We're hoping he can clear up some of the distortions modern man has placed upon the way we understand gender and sexuality. Welcome, Dr. Petitsis.
Thank you very much, Father Gregory. It's nice to be here.
Really glad you can join us. This is such an important topic, so thank you for taking the time. There's an Orthodox understanding of personhood, that mankind was created male or female. Today's society says that we were created male and or female. It's our choice. Is gender just a name we get to choose, or is it otherwise determined?
Well, this is a good question, and it really is vexing a lot of people. Apparently, you know, for many years, people really felt oppressed in their gender roles, especially women. This had historical dimensions even in the way we chose to live in the suburbs, and women were locked away and kept away from the world of work. There wasn't that older sense, either in the city, in the village, or in the farm, that there was a lot more access to life from within the home than you have in the suburb. And when the American women's movement broke out of that, they didn't really have a kind of a guidance, let's say. And we now seem to have gone to this other extreme where people not only reject confining gender roles or misapplications of gender roles, but they reject gender entirely.
Right. Well, you're in the academy, although I would think where you are, this is not such an issue. But this is a little after my time as a college student, but I believe people now get to choose the pronoun that they prefer to be addressed by.
Yes. I mean, our conception of gender, first of all, it became something very negative. Even within the church, we wouldn't vigorously, openly defend the idea that God created us male and female. There's a beauty to this difference. There's something good. It's something to be nourished and cherished. Instead, we just got this idea that it's strictly oppressive. And without really looking into where this would all lead, we sort of gave up the idea of talking about gender roles in any good way. I think now what's happening is we've come to what I would call a gender nominalism, where there's no connection between the underlying biology and reality and then how people identify in their gender. This is unprecedented, not really in all of human history, because it does coincide in other periods where you have a very high level of affluence. People also have gotten kind of unchained from their bodies. I would say they become more Gnostic. The church was born into an era where gender was similarly fluid for the elites.
That's really interesting. So we can see at least a trend if not a pattern, of affluence leading to this kind of gender confusion?
It's a trend, and of course that's the real story behind Sodom and Gomorrah, is that it all began because they experienced a kind of unprecedented prosperity. And within prosperity, we're insulated from kind of natural limitations, and we're able to take risks that we wouldn't otherwise take.
So this is a kind of a first world problem, for lack of a better term, right? My children complain that the internet is not fast enough, or, you know, that they don't have exactly what they want to have for dinner. Those are not as serious as this, but it sounds like they're not completely disconnected either.
It is a kind of first world problem. On the other hand, just due to our fallen human nature, there will always be some people for whom psychically they're not comfortable with their gender, or due to our fallen human natures, we create structures around gender that are oppressive. And so people, rather than trying to fix those structures, might be tempted to reject gender itself. But for us, that's very dangerous, because we believe that God made the creation good and it fundamentally remains good. And we believe that our calling is to transfigure this creation, not reject it. And our calling is to treat gender as an icon of some heavenly reality.
So is there anything else that you can see that clearly has led to our modern misconception that we get to choose our gender rather than adopt the gender that we have been given at birth?
Well, a huge influence is contraception. I don't want to press this point too far. I know it's not a thing people want to hear, but before 1929, no Christian denomination gave its unreserved blessing to birth control. And then even as late as 1969, it went to the U.S. Supreme Court whether a state like the state of Connecticut, in that case, could severely limit the sale of birth control, because societies thought that unhinging sex from procreation was likely to leave marriage very vulnerable. And that's pretty much what has happened. So that's another big influence. And then the great ideologies of our day. Many people on the left have noticed that, you know, big capital, let's say, in its marketing, tries to invade the family, get at your kids as consumers. The pressures of constant work in a capitalist society, all those things, they sort of want genderless worker drones. You know, what you might call the right wing has a motivation to destroy the family. And then Marxism on the other side has its own motivation to destroy the family, because nothing should come between the individual and the state. And this also is an incentive for people on the left to try to weaken the family's influence and constantly denigrate the role of the father, let's say. So between those two things, where is the Christian church to choose? We shouldn't really be choosing politically, but we should be looking to our heavenly archetypes and the saints in the older generations of what a Christian expression of manhood looks like, what a Christian expression of womanhood looks like. And this is where things get, you know, tricky for us, within monastic life, there is recorded some kind of a transcendence of gender. But again, it's not through a destruction of the body, and it's not through sexual license. But there is a level of chastity where we think of the monastics as leading an angelic life. They don't lose their gender entirely, but perhaps in some transfigured way, they become a mixture of adult and child. You know, just the way a boy or a girl is still their gender, a little boy or a little girl, but there isn't like a sexual expression yet to that.
That's very interesting. Way to think about that. I think that that's really helpful, and especially because a lot of our listeners may not have a lot of direct exposure to those who are living the monastic life. They may see pictures, they may read books, but may not have a lot of exposure. So that, I think that's really interesting, and I hope it will be for our listeners as well. So how do we appropriately express our Orthodox understanding of manhood, of womanhood, without being labeled a bigot? Sure, we shouldn't care if the world calls us a bigot, I suppose, on one hand, but we live in the world, even if we're not trying not to become fully part of the world. You know, how do we square that circle?
Wherever you're expressing your faith, it's going to be influenced by the surrounding culture. And if you look throughout the world, I mean, many Orthodox Christians live in Muslim-dominated societies. Others live under dictatorships or did until recently. Other people live in societies that are much more anti-religious and secular than our American society is. For example, in England or in New Zealand, where my brother is a missionary. And that's always going to be something that we have to work out, some kind of a struggle. And then if you're within an Orthodox country, again, you'll have to struggle against the misappropriations of the faith and or just the passivity. A lot of people are just cold and lukewarm towards the gospel. So you're always going to have those cultural tensions. Now, on this issue, we have to stand firm with love and say we believe that gender was created in this way for our salvation. And we respect that our larger society doesn't believe that anymore, but they're conducting a very bold experiment, and we know how it's going to turn out. You know, the rate of depression and suicide among people who have had, for example, gender reassignment surgery is so astronomically high. Right? This is not a good thing. It is medical malpractice. And the rate of domestic violence among same-sex male couples is so high, so much higher than it is among heterosexual couples. Again and again and again, we see that the ways that the world is following, they do not produce happiness. The rate of depression among people involved in same-sex relationships is so high. The rate of depression among people who are being promiscuous, you know, this is very high. You know, this famous book called Unprotected by Anonymous. She was a campus physician in a campus health center. And the way her poor female students had no religious background and couldn't understand why their sexually promiscuous lifestyles were leaving them so broken and so wounded and so depressed. And I think always we have to start by renewing our own faith, in other words, our own eros for Christ, to love Christ more warmly. And this will produce transfiguration in ourselves and those around us, and this will shine out. To some people, it will make them hate the church even more. That is true. It's always been the case. But for most people, it will be a consolation, and it will draw them out of these alternative lifestyles that aren't the ideal, and people are looking for an escape, and they can't find one.
So, Dr. Patissas, maybe you could touch a little bit on how the church fathers responded to similar challenges in the early church, especially when paganism was prevalent.
Well, I think, you know, you did not have, at that time, in this multicultural society of the Roman Empire, you didn't have the overwhelming public support, let's say, for these things that you do have now. There was a subset of people, an elite of people, practicing these things, either the cross-dressing or the gender confusion or the same-sex marriage. And so the fathers were quite strict. My own patron saint, St. Timothy, he was appointed the first bishop there in Ephesus in Asia Minor, which at that time was the third largest city in the Roman Empire. And during an all-night vigil in the 90s AD, he came out and denounced a parade that was celebrating promiscuity and sexual sin, and he was killed on the spot for that. So sometimes they confronted rather openly, other times they were patient with individual people, understood the difficulty of getting things right when we've had, you know, difficult past or when we've gotten into some bad habits. Always with love, with prayer, with the sacraments, with the transfigurative power of the holy mysteries, all these things. And then in preaching, again and again, reference to nature. This is not what nature is designed for. This isn't what our souls are designed for. There is a better way. Not that we should be abusive and stick to a wrong interpretation of gender roles, but in a loving way, we have to find the path that God has appointed.
Excellent.
I think we have to have our eyes open to the science and to the social science about what's going on in these communities. And with love and persistence and cheerfulness and a smile on our face, say, well, this is what we believe. We're 1/3 of 1% or 1% of Americans are Orthodox Christians. This is the ancient faith. This is what was given to us at the very first council of the church in the book of Acts. The apostle said, do not adopt the sexual morality of the Gentiles. Stick with what was handed to you from the Jews. On this point, there can be no compromise. And this is the way of life.
Excellent. I think that's a great place to end. Dr. Patissas, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. And I feel that just a tremendous empathy for everyone who's struggling in our society. I don't think it's some narrow subset of people. I think it's maybe even the majority of people that are struggling on some dimension of the sexual struggle, whether it's promiscuity or things online that we shouldn't be watching, or same-sex attraction or transgender disorientation. I think many, many people are struggling, and it's one of the problems of our age, and we should be patient and compassionate. Thank you, Father Gregory.
Thank you.
And thank you in the listening audience for joining us on this another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. And again, special thanks to Father Gregory for lending his skills to our broadcast today. If you'd like to know more about us, check us out on the web. Again, myocn.net. We're a nonprofit outreach. We really do look forward to hearing from you, knowing that you listen, and hopefully involving you in the ministry. If you believe in what we're doing, this worldwide outreach from the Orthodox Christian Church, then please pray about joining us financially. You can give safely and securely when you go to that website, myocn.net. I hope we'll see you next week, and in the meantime, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.